All right, welcome in everyone to another deep dive. This time, we're going all the way back to 1995.
Ooh, going way back.
Yeah, back to the Oregon Court of Appeals.
Okay.
We're looking at Richard v. Poisson. This case, it's a real doozy.
Yeah.
You know, it starts off like your classic landlord-tenant spat, you know, move-out day, disagreements over the security deposit.
Yeah.
But oh boy, does it spiral from there. We're talking accusations of theft, business signs gone missing, and even a full-blown lawsuit by the tenants, the Richards, against their former landlord, Mr. Poisson.
Yeah, it's like one of those neighbor disputes that just explode.
Right.
Yeah.
Gets way out of hand. So to really understand what went down here, we've got to dive into two very specific and often tricky legal claims. We've got intentional infliction of emotional distress.
Hmm.
You know, lawyers, we love our acronym, so we'll call that IIED for short.
Love a good acronym.
Yeah. And then we've got malicious prosecution. I mean, the names themselves sound kind of dramatic, right? And they hint at the fact that this case goes way beyond just, you know, typical disagreements. It really delves into this question of, like, where's the line? Where does the law draw the line between, like, really bad personal behavior and conduct that's so outrageous, so over the top, that it actually becomes a legal issue?
Yeah, and that's what we're going to be unpacking today.
Right. So for our listeners out there, especially you law students, buckle up.
Yeah.
Because Richard v. Poisson, it's a masterclass in, you know, how these seemingly abstract legal standards get applied to real-world messy human drama.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's start with this IID claim, intentional infliction of emotional distress. The trial court, they weren't having it. They dismissed it outright.
They basically tossed it out. They said, look, even if we take everything the Richards are saying is true, it still doesn't meet the requirements, the really strict requirements, to actually have a case for IIE.
Okay, so paint us a picture here. What were these allegations? What did the Richards accuse Poisson of doing that they said caused them such severe emotional distress?
Well, they claim that Poisson, he didn't just disagree with them. He launched this whole, like, campaign of harassment against them. We're talking painting graffiti on the windows of their store.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, not just like a little doodle, like full-on graffiti. Then on top of that, you've got these repeated harassing phone calls, like just nonstop calls. And if that wasn't enough, he was even like directing obscene gestures at their customers.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So it wasn't just like bad neighbor stuff. It was very targeted, very aggressive.
So it sounds like Poisson was going above and beyond, like really trying to make their lives miserable. But the trial court, they still weren't convinced that this reached the level of IID.
Right. But then it goes up on appeal, and the Oregon Court of Appeals, well, they saw things a bit differently.
All right. So what happened at the appellate level? Did they agree with the trial court?
Not quite. The majority of the judges on the Court of Appeals, they actually reversed the trial court's dismissal.
Oh, they brought it back.
They brought it back. And here's why. They said, look, if the Richards can prove these allegations, the graffiti, the calls, the gestures at the customers, if they can actually prove all that happened, well, then this pattern of behavior, it could meet that really high bar for IIED.
It could be outrageous enough.
Exactly. They were looking at the whole picture, the combined effect of all these actions, like one phone call, maybe not a big deal, but constant calls, plus graffiti, plus the customer harassment.
Yeah, the court said that could be seen as exceeding the bounds of socially tolerable conduct.
So the appellate court was saying, hold on, let's not dismiss this so quickly. There might be something here.
Right, it needs further examination. But of course, you know how it is with legal cases. There's always another side to the story.
Mm-hmm.
There was one judge, Judge Armstrong, who had a slightly different take.
Oh, right. He wrote a concurring opinion, right? So he agreed with the outcome, with bringing the IIED claim back, but he had some reservations. He didn't disagree that Poisson's behavior was bad. In fact, he called it boorish and obnoxious, which, I mean, that's pretty colorful language for a judge.
Yeah, right. Not pulling any punches there.
But his point was that even though it was bad behavior, even though it was obnoxious, it still didn't quite reach that incredibly high legal standard for IIED.
Outrageous in the extreme, right?
Yeah.
That's the phrase they use.
Exactly. He's like, yeah, it's bad, but not that bad in the eyes of the law.
Which, I mean, it kind of makes you scratch your head a little bit, right? Like, how do you draw that line?
It's tough, right? It shows how subjective this whole thing can be. What one person or one judge might find absolutely outrageous, another might see as, you know, bad, but not quite reaching that legal threshold.
Yeah, and I think that's a huge takeaway here for law students, or anyone really who's trying to understand these concepts. You know, you can read the legal definitions, but then you see how they play out in real life with all the nuances and complexities of human behavior. And it's like, whoa, it gets complicated fast.
Oh, absolutely. It's a great illustration of that gap between the theory and the actual practice of law.
Right. You know, in law school, you learn these neat little boxes, but real life, it's messy.
It spills out of the boxes.
Totally. So in this case, we have the majority of the appellate court saying, look, the combination of all these actions, it could be enough for IIE. And then you have Judge Armstrong saying, well, I'm not so sure.
Yeah.
I think for me, it highlights how important context is. Like a single instance of bad behavior, maybe it's not IIE'd.
Right.
But a repeated targeted pattern, that's a whole different ballgame. It suggests a real intent to cause distress.
Yeah, it's that element of intent that really comes into play with IIE.
Okay, so we've tackled the IIE claim. Let's move on to the other big one in this case, malicious prosecution. Now on this one, the trial court sided with Poisson, granted him summary judgment, and the Court of Appeals, they actually agreed with that decision.
Right.
So the Richards attempt to say Poisson had maliciously prosecuted them, it didn't fly.
It failed. And to understand why, we have to rewind a bit and look at how these criminal charges even came about.
Okay, so walk us through it.
So it starts with the missing business signs. Poisson, he reports this to the police. He says, hey, my signs are gone, and I think Richard might be involved.
Okay, so he points the finger at Richard.
Right. So the police, they start investigating. And during this investigation, Richard actually admits that his sons-in-law took the signs.
Oh, so he kind of confesses.
Well, he admits they took them, but he claims they were just moving them to a dumpster.
Right. So his version of events is it wasn't theft. It was just, you know, cleaning up.
Exactly. But the police, based on their investigation and Richard's own admission, they decide to recommend that charges be filed. Now, here's the key point. It was then the prosecutor, not the police, not Poisson, but the prosecutor, who made the final decision to actually charge Richard with theft.
So that's important because the Richards, they were trying to say Poisson was the one who got the whole ball rolling, that he was behind this prosecution.
Right. And that's where we get into the really nitty gritty of what it takes to prove malicious prosecution. You can't just say, oh, this person reported me to the police and I got charged, so it's their fault. There's more to it than that.
So what's the missing link? What else do you have to show?
You have to prove that the person who reported you, in this case, Poisson, actually influenced the prosecutor's decision to bring those charges. It can't just be that they reported a crime, even if they were wrong, or even if they, let's say, exaggerated things a bit. The prosecutor has to have relied on their information in a way that really drove the decision to prosecute.
So even if Poisson maybe wasn't totally honest with the police, even if he embellished things to make Richard look bad, if the prosecutor made their own independent call,
then that breaks the chain. It shows that the prosecutor wasn't just doing Poisson's bidding. They looked at the evidence, they made their own assessment, and they decided to move forward with charges based on their own judgment.
So Poisson might have been the instigator, but he wasn't the ultimate decision maker.
Exactly. And the courts, they really emphasize this. They want to protect the independence of the prosecutor. They don't want people to be afraid to report potential crimes, even if they might not have all the facts straight.
Right, because otherwise people might hesitate to come forward, and then real criminals might get away with stuff.
Exactly. It's about balancing things out. You want to protect people from malicious prosecution, but you also don't want to discourage people from reporting things that seem suspicious.
All right, so let's bring it all together. What are the big flashing neon sign takeaways from Richard v. Poisson? What should our listeners, especially those future lawyers out there, really remember about this case?
I think there are two major lessons here. First, with IED, remember context matters. It's not just about one bad act. It's about the cumulative impact of a pattern of behavior.
Right. It's the whole picture, the overall impression.
Exactly. Think back to the graffiti, the calls, the gestures, individually. Maybe those things aren't enough for IAD.
Yeah, maybe annoying, but not legally actionable.
Right. But when you put them all together, they paint a picture of a deliberate attempt to cause someone serious emotional distress.
And that brings us to the second big takeaway, the malicious prosecution lesson.
Yes, and for malicious prosecution, remember that prosecutorial independence is key. If the prosecutor makes an independent decision to bring charges, it's really hard to go back and say, oh, it's actually this other person's fault.
Right. even if that person maybe wasn't totally truthful or had some bad motives, the prosecutor's independent judgment acts as a kind of shield.
Exactly. It protects people who report crimes, even if they might not have everything exactly right. It ensures that the justice system isn't being used as a tool for personal vendettas.
So for our listeners who are, you know, deep in their law books right now, Richard V. Poisson, it's a reminder that the law, it's not always black and white. It's about analyzing the facts carefully, looking at the nuances, and understanding how these broad legal concepts actually apply in the messy reality of human interactions.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
You know, you learn about IIE and malicious prosecution in class, but this case, it shows you how those concepts actually play out in court.
It brings it to life.
Right. And it highlights that, you know, just because someone's a jerk, it doesn't automatically mean they've committed a legal wrong. There are specific standards, specific elements that have to be met.
And proving those elements, that's what separates a bad day from a legal case.
Well, this has been a fascinating deep dive into a case that, you know, at first glance might seem pretty straightforward. But as we've seen, it's packed with these really important legal lessons.
It's a classic example of how a seemingly simple dispute can raise some really complex legal questions.
So before we go, we always like to leave our listeners with something to ponder, something to chew on. So here's a question for you all. How do you think the legal framework we've discussed today, the way the courts approach IIED and malicious prosecution, how does that strike a balance between protecting individuals from genuine harm, you know, from truly outrageous behavior, or being unfairly targeted by the legal system, and at the same time, not discouraging people from reporting potential crimes, even if they might be mistaken or maybe haven't gotten all the facts straight? Where do you think that line should be drawn? It's a tough question with no easy answers, and it's one that's relevant not just for lawyers, but for all of us. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into Richard V. Poisson. We'll see you next time.